Hello, and you are listening to FP Cast, the official podcast for Fruitless Pursuits, where we bullshit about the week in pop culture. I'm Luke.
And I'm Jacinta.
And this week we're talking about
movies, television, collectibles, video games.
We were just watching a lot of Oscar talk.
Yes.
And because, of course, the Oscars will actually have happened by the time you hear this.
Yeah.
But we're recording this on Saturday, Australian time, so we don't know yet. But Gawker had this wonderful article about early shitty performances by some of the best actor nominees. And there's little YouTube clips of some of these performances. And we were just watching Benedict Cumberbatch in 2000 on Heartbeat.
Which is a... Is it a Scottish police?
British.
Yeah, British. Yeah, it's a sort of country police procedural sort of thing.
And Benedict's on there. He's playing a twat.
A twat called Charles.
A twat called Charles. He's done the wrong thing. He's got a very funny, like... baby face, but like a baby fish face, and ginger hair, and a little voice, and it's just incredible to watch this thing and think, here is the guy that people are like, oh that voice, oh my god. Like, remember when we were seeing the Desolation of Smaug trailer, and there's these fangirls squealing and going, oh, that voice and stuff. It's so much fun to watch this Heartbeat clip and go, oh that voice, look at him, he's so dreamy,
so sexual. I loved how he was talking about the jar of money in the garage. That was so hot.
He's like, I didn't know that people were gonna die, Uncle. Betty. Fuck. So yeah, we were just talking about the fact that you know, they're giving him very suspect looks throughout that, very stern suspect looks, and I think they think he's a fish.
Yeah, because it would explain all the mysterious jelly left on the curtains.
Don't you lay your eggs in here, fish. I'm on to your game.
Go back to the lake, Sonny, where your kind are.
We've had a report, sir, that a fish has climbed out of the pond and has gone into people's houses, pretended to be human. I fucking knew it! I fucking knew it when I saw that egg jelly. Nearly fucking slipped in it. You are a fish. I'm sorry, Uncle.
I was wondering why he kept shoving his head in the bathtub every half an hour. Anyway,
Every 5 seconds.
Yeah, he kept walking into rooms, not sure why he was there, walking back out, forgetting his name.
Yeah.
What a dickhead. There has also been some other Cumberbatch news this week.
Oh, yes.
So, Cumberbatch got married on Valentine's Day.
Oh, my God, he's so romantic.
What a twat! And the very, very unconfirmed reports, every article that I went to try and get a bit more information on that was like, yeah, well, maybe, because this person was there and they, like, know each other and they've worked together before, so... The reports were that Tom Hiddleston was his best man, but nobody has any fucking evidence to back that up at all.
When did they work together?
Warhorse.
Okay.
For like that 15 minutes before they both died.
Minutes that we spent together on Warhorse?
Yeah.
You're my best man.
Yeah, we are best friends.
That is the best man I can think of right now.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Like, you were talking last week about... Mm. Hiddleston, for example, we were talking about our fuck lists.
Yeah.
And you said Chris Evans, and that really made me think, yeah, okay, like, you were talking about now someone more down to earth, someone that, yeah, could look good, but you could also have a beer with on the weekend and sit around and watch TV all day if you wanted to. That was the thing. And I just can't imagine Benedict and his wife having that sort of, like, what's their downtime like? What do they talk about over breakfast?
They talk about, you know, the quality of the fox hunt last weekend. Oh, which was wonderful when the hounds ripped that little fellow apart, wasn't it?
Actually, though, then do you think that, I mean, most actors, particularly British actors, have their theatre voice. And you kind of realize when you see these early performances of him, but now he's just, and it's easy to dupe America with an accent.
Mm.
Now he's just doing his theater voice all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that's his real voice.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sham.
It's his facade.
It's a scam. It's his persona.
Mm.
Maybe he's actually a bit of a chav behind the scenes.
Oh, imagine that.
That'd be great. Yeah. Then I'd have a lot more respect for him. If he was sort of like that kind of transition you see with the Mandarin in Iron Man 3.
Or if he was like, you know, like a housing estate kid and he dressed like Eggsy from Kingsman.
He's got his sideways cap on.
His massive trainers.
Oh, fucking hang about. I want fucking chips for dinner, then I can.
Oh, what? But it's a bulldog, isn't it?
It's a fucking bulldog. Yeah.
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 Yeah, we're a bit thin on news. We've got Cumberbatch getting married and Aquaman.
Yeah, Zack Snyder tweeted our first shot of Aquaman, played by Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
He'll be joining the Justice League. And rumours were that he was going to have a cameo in this Batman V5 Superman film. And he looks pretty much as you'd expect. He looks like Khal Drogo with a trident.
Yeah, I actually didn't realise it was Zack Snyder that had tweeted the picture originally when I saw it going around. And I just thought it was fan art. I just thought someone had just taken a Khal Drogo picture and just put Photoshop tattoos on him.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, because it's black and white and it has big text over it.
Yeah.
It reminds you of The Social Network.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make 50 million fish and not make some anemones. Huh?
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I feel like they're going to just treat this guy like Thor, where, like, Thor comes from a fanciful place. Mm-hmm. He comes from Asgard, but when he's hanging out with the Avengers, it's like, you know, I'm strong, and I can fly, and I can hit shit.
Mm.
And that's kind of it. It's not like, you know, and Aquaman, I think, is going to be the same. It's like, I come from the sea, but now I'm just going to fight and hit people with my twat.
I can't wait for the scene where he walks past the pet shop and all the hermit crabs scuttle out and follow him down the street.
And he's like, oh, again. I still want to see him get some crayfish out of a tank at a restaurant.
Mm.
Maybe they can pinch some of the villains.
Or he can, like, strap them to his forearms and have them as, like, weapons, yeah.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Yeah.
Swordfish. He might have a duel using a swordfish as a sword.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. He could have, like, a chariot with probably have to be seals, like land-dwelling sea animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't go very fast, but, you know.
Not many so much can do on land. To, yeah, exactly. And if it's like in New York or something, he's not going to want to swim in any of that water, is
no,
he?
No, no.
Come out like covered in fucking syringes. It's not like he's even got a shirt on.
No, he's guarded by those tattoos, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it just exactly a what you'd expect.
Dude, bro, force field. Yeah.
Yeah. So the text says unite the seven.
Mm.
So we've seen four of them now. We, of course, have seen Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and now Aquaman. We know they've cast the Flash. We know they've cast the Cyborg. Not entirely sure who the other one is.
Mm.
So I'm guessing Martian Manhunter, who will just be called Manhunter, because Martian Manhunter sounds kind of whack.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say wacky, and then I just thought, no, I'll keep this.
It's whack.
Keep this street.
Yeah.
Keep this urban.
Yep. And, obviously if you're American, then it is Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Which nearly killed me through that whole season of Entourage, where all they're talking about how Vinny's going to play Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Ugh. Jesus.
Aquaman.
What else have we even got to talk about? Not much.
What else happened this week? Well, we're going to review a movie. Start to tune out and go, okay, well, that sounds like it's about it. We are going to review Jupiter Ascending. Yeah. We saw that.
Which probably has something to do with our weird fucking brain dead mood, to be honest.
Yeah. So brace yourselves for that.
Mm.
I thought there was another piece of news. We're not even working with any notes.
No.
How unprofessional are we?
Oh,
there was something else.
Jupiter Ascending has killed all of our brain cells.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, that's going to be the meat of today's podcast. So if you are planning on seeing it and you haven't, we might get a little bit spoilery.
Mm, but it's probably not going to ruin your experience of the movie.
No, story's not a massive thing. It's really just a visual overload.
Yeah.
Well, fuck it. We can't, like, we just pretty much introduced it. We got to talk about it now.
Let's go for it.
Otherwise, we have to introduce it again later.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to stupidly ascend twice.
Plus, I'm full of fish and chips.
Yeah.
I had a Chico roll.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. That's very Aussie of you.
I've been longing for one. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's ever longed for a Chico roll in the entire history.
That's what they had to go nation. When you ordered a Chico roll. They had to go back out to the safe, out the back, and like crack one off. The
it was a time capsule.
Yeah.
From the mid-80s.
They had to turn the little dial and...
It was a young kid, and he was like, Chico, what? What? What's a Chico roll? Like, if you remember our Australia Day episode, we talked about the Chico roll, and I've wanted one ever since, because I haven't had one for many years. Mm. So, how much do you think Chico roll costs these days?
Well, it's a vintage item, so about $24.
Well, I thought it would be, you know, not massively cheap. $3, which is pretty good here.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Mm.
And, it's tastes the same after all these years.
Probably because it was one from 1982. Despite
being buried in the back of this fish and chip shop. It tasted the same, yeah, so that was really good.
Good.
So that's something. Mm. That was a couple of minutes.
It was a good 30 seconds. Pat it out. Yeah.
We should just do a padding episode where we don't have, like... anything. Saying that meaning this could be it.
Yeah.
And we have to take turns coming up with topics.
Okay.
And then when it runs out, the other person has to do a topic.
Okay.
And then it's like bam, 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 bam.
Oh, shit.
And you just have to do it.
Yeah, right.
But.
Speaking of padding, there will be some...
in Jupiter Ascending. So let's talk about Jupiter Ascending.
All right.
I think it was best summed up by the movie finishes. We saw it with Suzanne. The three of us are just sort of sitting there in silence, just staring at the screen. And there's people behind us. And this woman leans to this guy and goes, oh, what did you think of that? And he goes, oh, I didn't understand any of it. I really didn't understand that. I just totally missed it. And I did understand it. I'm not saying... Yeah. Like, it is actually pretty straightforward in terms of the plot. But what I didn't understand was the thought processes that decided that we're going to do this and this and then some of this. Because there are a lot of ideas.
Yes.
A lot of different influences. It's tonally really different. Like, those first three scenes couldn't be more different from each other. And you have no idea at that point in the film how they... tie together or why or what you're even watching. And I just gotta say, like, the Wachowskis have totally fucking lost it. Like, that is an insane film two insane people. That said, I'm really glad that insane people get to make huge, big budget films. I don't think anybody's having as much fun as they are. Like, I think they're getting, 100 times more out of it than the audience is. Because it's just all these things that I guess they're interested in or think, you know, this is a really great idea.
Yeah.
But, God, like, it's hard as just a bystander just seeing all this fast-moving craziness just happen. And you're like, well, he's a half-dog, like, bounty hunter guy that used to have wings and... Then she's got purple hair and drives an invisible bike and he's got anti-grav shoes and she's in modern-day Chicago cleaning toilets.
And then there's another guy who's, like, really likes bees.
And then there's, like, the three siblings who wear big fancy robes and live on Naboo. And it's like, what?
And then, like, she turns out to be, like... their reincarnated mother, and then one of them tries to fuck her, and it's just like, what even is going on here?
You summed it up pretty well downstairs. Do you want to share that?
Yeah, so, like, I must admit that even though it was probably a little bit long and it did definitely drag in parts, that I did enjoy it. I got a kick out of it because I was coming at it from the sort of standpoint that everything in this movie is like it was... original fiction written by a 16-year-old girl. Every single element is what some 16-year-old girl would have gone, oh, I like these things, and then, you know, pulling influences from different movies that she's seen, and kind of like, oh, and there was this hot guy, and he wore heaps of eyeliner, and then, oh my god, he had wings! things. And it just, like, that's what got me through, because literally every new scenario, every sort of new thing that these characters were doing just sat so firmly in that sort of mindset, and it really got me through it.
And visually, it is just a mashup of all this stuff. Like, some of it felt like the Star Wars prequels, some of it felt like the Fifth Element. A lot of it felt like the Mass Effect games. Mm. It's all these different bits and pieces, and it's just completely unvetted. It's just like, we want these guys to be dinosaur dragon men. Fine. I mean, there's a pilot on the ship that's got an elephant's head, pretty much. And it's like, okay. And then, like, when they get into a bit of a sort of a scuffle, he trumpets and his trunk goes up. And you're just like, there's no explanation as to why everyone else is human on that ship.
Because he's not done it at any point before. And he seemed like a relatively humanoid sort of character up to that point.
Just, and then
he
just suddenly,
out of nowhere, just trumpets, and the whole audience is going, whoa, hang on, what's happening here?
And this wasn't like 50 Shades of Grey. This isn't an audience that was laughing all along. This was a silent, confused audience.
Yeah.
Like, just going, what are we watching? And why are we watching it? I think my biggest problem with it is that visually it's really interesting, it's really out there, but I think the biggest problem is there's no humour or nuance or warmth to the characters or dialogue. Like, you're not really invested in any of the characters, and none of them have any personality traits that I could really pin down.
Mm.
We're told by another character what Channing Tatum's half-dog character is like. Oh, he's this guy, and he's this, and he did this, etc. But we're being told that. Mm. We're never shown that aspect of the character that's being described. So, and Mila Kunis is delightful to look at. I think she's really interesting. But again, she doesn't have much of a character either.
No, and there's that point where they're sort of starting to suggest the romance between her and Channing Tatum, Dogman. And you're just sort of thinking, why? Like, you've already found out that this guy's like a bounty hunter who's gone a bit psycho in the past and killed somebody. And she's going, oh, I always fall for the wrong man. And he's like, well, we probably shouldn't fuck. And she's like, oh, yeah, okay. And then, like, 10 minutes later, she's like, oh, we should probably fuck. And it's like, why? I don't understand why any of you are feeling these feelings.
I feel like there's this really weird shift happening now where you have, you know, more emphasis put on examining female roles and challenging traditional notions of female roles that have been in movies forever. You know, the genre movie, the princess usually kind of gets rescued and things like that. And the male often, you know, you like me because I'm a scoundrel and starts kissing her and everything. And I feel like people are trying to reverse that, but they're still doing the exact same things. Mm. Like, she's still the damsel in distress for 90% of this film.
Yeah, she doesn't have a great deal of sort of agency. She doesn't do a great deal for herself.
And they're still getting together in the blink of an eye, just like every other film. The only difference is they're going, oh, but she wants it. She's aggressing.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a step forward, but I feel like, did you hear Matthew Vaughn's defense of the criticism of the ending of Kingsman, which was in the news a bit this week? I don't want to spoil that. If you've seen The Kingsman, you know what I'm talking about. But he was like, oh, you know, because she wanted it and it wasn't him, you know, he thought it was a strong woman.
No, but she's offering it up as a prize.
Yeah, and why would she want, like, it's not remotely believable that she would want that anyway.
Yeah.
If you've been imprisoned.
Yeah, you probably just want to go home.
And, you want a shower.
Probably, yeah. Not a golden shower, just a regular shower.
Yeah, and he's, like, defended it and then said, oh, you know, bloody feminist and all this sort of stuff, and trying to, like, rationalise this thing. But again, it still has the same outcome. The fact that the female aggressed instead really doesn't make a difference. I don't think it's any more satisfying. Yeah. I don't care. Like, I love to see a female character aggress, but earn it.
Yeah.
Like, build the relationship up beforehand and make us care about the characters, give them chemistry and make us want it to happen.
Yeah.
At the moment, I feel like in all these instances, in Kingsman, it was a joke. Which, and his explanation was pretty much exactly what I said when we reviewed Kingsman.
Yeah.
That idea of, well, it's playing on those 60s Bonds tropes. That's how they normally end. And we're amping it up, just like we did with the violence and everything else. But, yeah, they're still ending up in this place. And I don't mind if it's earned. But you've got to take us on that journey. You've got to make us give a shit. And I didn't give a shit about any of these characters, really. No. I mean, I'm intrigued by them because they're just so wacky.
Yeah.
But there's also that Star Wars thing. Like, look at the bounty hunters. And I apologize that I don't know the actress's name. She's the Asian actress that was also in...
Was she in...
Cloud Atlas.
Oh. Was she in Pitch Perfect?
No,
don't... Was she fake that girl?
Don't think so. No. But she's got a really cool sort of cyberpunk look. She's got purple hair, face tattoos. She's riding this bike. But it's that Boba Fett kind of thing where, yeah, you're a cool character and you look cool and you're in the background a bit and you do a little bit of stuff. Yeah, but
not much stuff.
You're just a, featured extra almost. Yeah. And she's a cool actress. Mm. So I don't know. I just can't believe that they keep getting the money to do all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, because that, like, it looked insanely amazing. Like, visually, it was crazy.
Expensive.
And, yeah, crazy expensive. And I can't see it bringing in a quarter of what it cost to make.
So some studio person must have thought that it had legs as a franchise.
Mm.
I feel like there's a part of it in there by incorporating the real world. That was the thing I didn't expect, was all that modern-day Chicago stuff in it. I thought it was going to be just a total sci-fi story. But I suppose there was that layer of a Matrix style, there is more to the world than you think, and there is more, you're an ordinary person, and we're going to introduce you to all this other stuff that's going on outside of that.
Yeah.
And there were Matrix-y elements, and I do wonder if someone's sort of going, you know, in a studio boardroom going, okay, it's Matrix meets Star Wars meets this, great, perfect, sold, you know, it's going to work. But it doesn't feel like there was a lot of interference. I don't know if there was. But I can't imagine any of that stuff getting through if it was a lot of interference.
Yeah.
It just really seems like people doing whatever the fuck they want.
Mm. And everything with the family, like literally every scene with the family was the most excruciating thing in that movie.
It's weird when you involve a family, like when mums and dads and stuff are in the sci-fi setting.
And then there's the crazy cousin who's like, yeah, sell your eggs for money. And you're like, but why? Why, Kit Gurry, Australian actor?
Doing a horrible American accent. We do pick on American actors when they do bad Australian accents. And we're also going to pick on Australian actors doing very bad American accents, as was the case. He wasn't fooling anybody, I don't think.
No.
So, yeah, I can't really in good conscience recommend it because I think it's a bit of a chore.
Yeah, I think I would have found it, even though I did enjoy it and I thought it was, you know, kind of good fun, it wasn't a very good movie and we definitely didn't kind of get that sort of weirdly joyous kick out of it that we got for from 50 Shades, but you could probably watch it in like three chunks. Like you could watch, you know, an hour, then another hour, and then an hour and a half, then another half an hour. And that would probably work pretty well.
I feel like it's how you want to manage your time. Like if you go in, you know, it's the weekend and we're going to go and see this a movie and we're going to spend money on it and we're going to make it, you know, this is probably not what you want to do. But if you were like having a piss up and you were all drinking with friends and you put on
background noise,
Jupiter Ascending, you would have a great time, I think. Because it's pretty out there. But yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to recommend as something to spend money on.
It kind of is, yeah. Which is a shame. I love the Wachowskis. I've still got all that goodwill. Like, next time they do something great, I'll come along. I'd rather see a failed experiment than no experiment at all.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'd rather see somebody completely go off the rails than play it safe.
Mm.
Because I think the stuff that, you know, people talk about, oh, this is the worst movie ever made, or this is the worst movie ever made, and it's boring movies are the worst movies ever made.
Mm.
You know, something like, it's not your fucking Ninja Turtles and stuff like that. They're not the worst movies ever made. It's that stuff that's just so tedious and bland that you forget about it.
Yeah.
But, Jupiter Ascending. High praise. What are you going to give it on Letterboxd? How many stars?
What did I give 50 Shades? Like
one and a half? Oh, I gave it 2 stars.
I might have to give 50 Shades another half a star and give this 1.5.
Yeah.
Because it succeeds in other areas that obviously Fifty Shades does not, but I still had a better time with Fifty Shades.
I would watch Fifty Shades again, especially with someone that hadn't seen it who was going to have fun with me watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be hard pressed to watch Jupiter Ascending again.
But yeah, it'd be all right. As I said, you know, as you said, it's background noise at a party, but I cannot see myself buying that on DVD ever.
But I would go and see a sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, so would I. Because you just think, well, can it get more batshit insane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to see, like, Channing Tatum's ridiculous dog boy back. He's got the pointy ears. He's got the yellow bleached goatee. He's got a heap of eyeliner.
And they're like, oh, he was a reject. He was a runt of the litter. He came out an albino. And you're just like, oh, that's probably detail we didn't really need.
Well, it didn't go anywhere, did it? There's a lot of things where it feels like there was a bigger plan or a bigger universe in mind. Yeah. I did feel like it was a sort of, you know, maybe this is a franchise. Maybe people will want to see more. Yeah,
maybe we'll find out more information about how she's Queen of the Bees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Bees can sense royalty. Did you know that?
I do now.
Yeah. So, you know, if there was ever a bee infestation at Buckingham Palace, it'd be fine. The Queen could just go in there and pick up the hive with her hands and drop kick it out the door.
Over
one
the fence.
Does not need bees in one's fucking house.
Drop kick it over to France.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Man, half an hour.
Fuck. What else can we talk about? Did you see... This is completely, completely unplanned. You may remember... I'm watching Ink Master at the moment, and you have watched Ink Master previously. One of the last episodes I watched was the promo episode that they were doing for X-Men Days of Future Past, where they had to do X-Men tattoos.
Yeah, yeah.
These people came out, and I thought, oh, okay, they're going to, like, propose X-Men characters that they love, and these people are going to tattoo them on them. And they came out holding promotional headshots of the characters.
Promotional headshots for
Days of Future Past
were just fucked.
Yeah, and so you've got the couple of lucky people who have got... There were two people with Wolverine. Like, obviously, these people have just been assigned these characters, because there is no way people are going to pick some of these characters.
Warpath.
There was a Warpath, there was a Blink, worst of all, there was a fucking Iceman. Some poor prick is walking around with whichever Ashmore brother it was playing Iceman.
Warpath's worse. Warpath just looks like Grumpy Cat. Or, like, he's got long... There's nothing about him which says X-Men. At least, like, Iceman has been in a lot of the films and he's recognisable. You go, oh, that's Iceman. But that is the problem with those X-Men films. You look at most of those characters as a headshot. Magneto, you've got the helmet.
Yes.
Wolverine, you've got the claws coming up.
Yep.
But otherwise, there's just nothing there to suggest that these aren't just a bunch of dudes.
My favourite one, well, not my favourite one because it was hideous, is there was a guy there holding up the headshot of James McAvoy as young Professor X. And I was like, holy fuck, I cannot wait to see this. Because I'm like, I love James McAvoy. I'm not having him tattooed on my body, though. And the guy did such a fucked job of it. Like, it made him look about 70.
It was a really munted
McAvoy. It was a really bad tattoo. But there was someone else who got Patrick Stewart, and that was pretty great.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Oh, there was a girl who got the Anna Paquin. That was a really, really good one. So there's a couple of people who, you know, like, oh, I wouldn't get Rogue tattooed on my leg, but, you know, she came out of it with a nice tattoo, but fuck, that was so cringeworthy. And then they got Hugh Jackman out at the end to announce the winner, and he's going, oh, they're all really nice, and the actors would be, you know, so pleased with your work. And I'm like, fuck that.
Yeah, why does he have to be so nice all the time?
Yeah, I know.
He should have been. Like, it's Australian as well to just be like,
well, that's a fucking piece of bullshit, isn't it?
Oh, fuck. Look at what you did to McAvoy. I'm going to call him now. I'm going to tell him what you did.
I'm going to fucking FaceTime the shit out of this.
Hey, look, McAvoy. Yeah, you mate. Look at this. Look at this. What's that? It's you, mate. It's you. That's supposed to be you. What? Get out of it. Fuck, and I'll come down there now. God, and you know I like Melissa Monroe in that. See the look she was giving Hugh Jackman.
Oh, yeah. She's like, can I have a hug? And I'm like, fucking asking for more than a hug, mate.
Like what, Jacinta?
Oh, look, they've
got... This is the end of Kingsman all over again.
They've got all those little tattoo studio rooms. You can take them away into one of those for 10 minutes. It'll be fine. But yeah, that was an excruciating episode. I'm enjoying the show, but they just fight so much. It makes me sad.
Why can't everybody just get along?
Yeah. And there's, like, really annoying people. Like, there's a girl, is it Ashley?
Think so, yeah. Ashley Bennett?
I don't know her surname. And she kept... There was three girls in this season, I think so. And she was always going, well, you know... And she was always just crying and being a fucking psycho. And she was going, oh, well, you know, I'm allowed to because I'm a girl. And when we get stressed, we just cry. And the other two girls are like, oh, my God, shut up, please. You're making us all look really bad. And in the end, she had a bit of a meltdown and she left anyway. So that was great.
Couldn't hack it.
Could not hack it. And then Kyle screamed at her and I was like, oh, Kyle, chill out there. And then, yeah, there was another contestant who, when he got told that his tattoo was shit, he basically insinuated that they were homophobic and they were being mean to him because he was gay. It's like, no, buddy, your art was shit.
It's a tattoo competition.
It's a tattoo competition. Nobody cares who you're having sex with, buddy. So I just have fucking, like, precious people who just use their... Ugh.
Well, if we're talking about old TV shows that we've watched...
Yeah, fuck it. That's where we're at this point.
If it's come to this... I watched Immortalizers.
Okay.
Immortalized. So picture this. It's like a 21-minute game show, reality show. And they have four immortalizers who are, like, just top-draw fucking taxidermists.
Okay.
They're just brilliant at it.
Yeah.
And a challenger comes up who's, like, just some dude, some woman, and goes, hey, yeah, I'm going to challenge an immortalizer. They say what their strengths are. And then there's four massive pictures of the heads of the four immortalizers behind.
Yeah.
And then all this, like... big operatic music plays and one of the panels opens up and that immortalizer comes out to challenge them.
And it's kind of like Iron Chef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they go, okay, well, this is the theme. Like, the theme might be size matters or love and war or whatever. There's only 8 episodes made.
Okay.
And then they go off for weeks to go and do this thing at their own homes.
Yep.
So, which obviously, like, they didn't bring them in to film that. 2 minutes and then send them off and then bring them in. So, I guess they have to bring a couple of changes of clothes and pretend it's all done on different days. And then there's three judges, one who's, she's a taxidermy artist of note. The other guy, I think, like, is the taxidermy expert at the Smithsonian or something.
Uh-huh.
And then Brian Posehn, comedian, podcast host of Nerd Poker, is there as well for some reason.
Yep.
And it's just insane. It's really kind of poorly made and just really awkward. Like, the first immortalizer that came out was this woman. And she, like, looks at the guy. And he was a bug guy. He would pose beetles and things and glue them to toilets and bikes and stuff.
Okay, yep.
And they said to him before she came out, have you ever eaten any of your subjects? And he said, oh, yeah, I've had some pepper... bugs that tasted like pepper.
Okay.
They were probably the best. And they're like, all right. And then she comes out and they're like, have you ever eaten any of your clients, subjects? And she goes, I eat my competition alive. Because they got to, you know, build the rivalry.
Yeah.
And he's sort of standing there awkwardly and the host is there awkwardly. And then the contestant goes, I don't know if it tastes very good. And you're like, and she's sort of looking at him and I'm thinking, this is really weird. But I did learn quite a bit about taxidermy, which is cool. I had no idea. I mean, I don't know what I thought that, you know, they somehow managed to keep this meat fresh or whatever. Yeah. But, yeah, I didn't realize it was just the pelts. I guess I'd never thought about it.
Mm.
But, yeah, they take the pelts and they put them over, like, a foam or plastic cat or clay cat or whatever, and then add the ice. There's not actually much animal.
Yeah,
left.
I went down a bit of a taxidermy rabbit hole on YouTube one night watching someone prepare, like, a deer bust.
Right.
So they had the deer and they were showing you, like, how to cut around the horns to get the pelt off nicely and stuff. And it was, like, really, really interesting.
Yeah, and the quality of work really, really varied. They've got this great Japanese guy who's one of the immortalizers who is just hilarious and insane. And he made all these, like, five-headed fox creatures and beasts with multiple eyes. And he puts his own skin and blood into the work so that it's part of him as well.
Okay.
And he's all kind of wacky. So, yeah, that was all pretty good. And totally forgotten what I was going to say. So there was one of what... Oh, yeah. One of the guys, because there's a lot of real rednecky guys on there.
Yeah.
And one of them, like, God, in terms of a fucking stereotype, he's this, like, southern dude who's got a pink mohawk.
Uh-huh.
And he's got that sort of beady animal sort of look in his eyes.
Yeah.
And their theme was Your Greatest Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this, like, weird, overwrought 9/11 tribute with, like, an eagle. And they're not allowed to use endangered animals, so he had to make an eagle out of a chicken and sculpt bits of their head and stuff so it looked really malnourished. And there was a Twin Towers behind it and firemen's helmets and stuff. And then when he came back on the next episode that I saw, it was Your First Love. And he did a Jesus one with lambs and like a big crucifix.
Oh,
and
he's
just like, as though it was a matter of fact, everybody's first love is Jesus. That's your first love. I'm just like, wow, this guy is pretty out there.
That is a whole nother universe that I do not understand.
I know, it's crazy.
Oh,
so yeah, that's called Immortalized.
Mm. Something a little bit less creepy that I have been watching on the this is what's happening, guys. This is just where we are going.
Yeah, we've never done this before,
though. No, this is our padding episode. We never fucking explained where the padding was in fucking Jupiter Ascending. The guy's bleeding, so she just gets a sanitary pad and sticks it over his wound the wrong side up.
Yeah, but then, like, later on, she takes it off and then holds it up to the camera. Because she's showing Sean Bean this bloodied pad. So there's Mila Kunis holding this bloodied pad and going, shrug, like, what can you do? At the camera, and you're like, whoa, there's a screenshot for the podcast. If only you could find that.
So I have been watching on the History Channel On Demand a show called Museum Men.
Okay, I like this already.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's these dudes who, like, build displays for museums.
And then at midnight, they all come to life, right?
Yeah. Ben Stiller has to do a ceremony and bless them and everything, but, you know.
It would be great if...
That's another show.
Ben Stiller came in and looked at the work they did and decided whether or not he would grant it life.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, No.
No, these guys are very, very good.
Yep.
They're pros. They do stuff for museums all over the country. And, you know, so museums will come to them and go, hey, we want a, you know, like an Egyptian exhibition. There was one museum that had this... Somehow they'd got this fucking mummy. God knows where they'd got it from. And they're like, okay, so we want an exhibition around this mummy kind of thing. So these guys, like, they built a sarcophagus and they built some, like, crazy, like, Anubis head thing. And they go through the whole process of them constructing it and sort of from the illustration stage and the kind of computer layout stage into actually constructing it. And it's really cool.
I have a question.
Yes.
Isn't, like, the whole point of museums, though? Like, if I'm going to go see an Egyptian thing...
Yeah.
I want to see, like, actual Egyptian things. I don't want to see some stuff that some dudes got hired to come in and make. That's more like a movie set.
Yeah, but it was sort of, like, embellishments around this mummy that they already had.
So they just got one mummy.
They just got one mummy, and they can't just put the mummy in a room by itself. So they've got other stuff. What's it cost
to see this mummy?
I don't know. It's America, probably, like, 50 cents.
Okay.
There was another one, which is for a science museum, which they had to make a working... I can't remember the king's name, but there was a king that would have, like, an elevating throne to make his subjects all scared of him. So they had to work out how that would theoretically work in a simple sort of hydraulics manner. So they had to make this working thing with hydraulics so that kids could come along and push the lever and the throne would go up and all that sort of stuff. And they also made a working carriage of Abe Lincoln's death carriage. He had, you know, carriages all across the United States to transport his body back home. And they made a full working carriage, and it was pulled by horses and everything. And it's very interesting because it's like craft and history.
A lot of paper mache.
Lots of foam. Mm. Yeah, a lot of foam. Mm. A lot of gold paper. Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to flip through this old TV guide I have here and I'm going to read out some entries.
Oh, step by step.
Friends, repeat. Joey and Chandler see old naked guys' Christmas balls. Could he be any more festive?
The one where Ross and Rachel go over their relationship again.
Yeah. Oh, Friends. Don't you miss Friends?
No, because Friends is repeated every fucking day.
Was that right?
Yeah.
See, I don't have commercial TV.
Channel 9, it's on every day. And now they've just put the entire of Friends up on Netflix, so you can friend whenever you want.
Well, that's what I'm going to do right now.
Okay.
Fuck these guys. Fuck this show. I'm out. Yeah. Well, let's get out of here. Like, let's not fucking waste everybody's time. We did a show. That's all you've got to do.
I don't know. I feel like we probably started wasting our time about half an hour ago, to be fair. Yeah. But, you know, maybe we should just...
Should we keep wasting it?
I don't know. What have we got to talk about?
Jupiter! Actually, you know, today I can't remember how it came up, but I was singing and it wasn't annoying at all.
I bet it wasn't, yeah.
Yeah. The seals on the bus go... The seals on
the bus. No, please don't. Please stop. Please stop. I was ready to fucking murder you after the first one. Holy shit.
Seals. They're so annoying. That'll be Aquaman's entrance. Come out of the ocean with his seal bus.
It'll be like the cat bus from whatever anime that is, but it'll just be seals.
All right, look, we're going to do better next week. But we told you about Jupiter Ascending, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
We saved you some money.
Yeah, and we said do not go and see it.
So any predictions for the Oscars just before we go out? Because they're going to have happened by the time this comes up. So any idea for Best Picture?
Probably the Vine of Benedict Cumberbatch photobombing somebody again.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, that's the thing. They're the questions. Will he photobomb?
Yes.
Will he win?
No.
I'm hoping. No, but the thing is, if he wins, he really wins, because he'll be able to act like the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes and everything were bullshit.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got finally what was... He'll be insufferable. And you know how you sent me that gif of him?
Yeah.
Like, explain this gif.
Oh, okay. So he's like doing an interview and the lady who is interviewing him sort of says, oh, so there's been some changes in your personal life recently. Like, oh, and he sort of is like, oh, well, I don't know. And then he kind of glances down at his hand and he's like, oh, what's that there? Oh, is that a wedding ring?
Oh, you mean this wedding ring? Oh,
yeah.
So that'll be him. It'll be him with the Oscar if he wins.
But, oh, is this my... Oh, he'll just be carrying it as a fucking necklace.
Yeah.
He'll just be wearing it around his neck.
And he'll be like, oh, this Oscar. Ooh, oh,
well, I just forgot it was there.
This little golden man. So,
No, I hope Eddie Redmayne wins and his...
Or Michael Keaton.
Well, yeah, Michael Keaton. But if Eddie Redmayne wins, they'll just put up like a montage of him in Jupiter Ascending, just whispering huskily.
Oh, God, I hated him in Jupiter Ascending.
I loved him. I thought he was fucking wonderful.
What was with that performance? It was just so... It was like, I just can't be fucked doing this.
No, I loved it. He was so fucking ridiculous.
All right, so I'm going to say, it's probably going to be Boyhood, right? I'd like it to be Birdman. I'd like to see Michael Keaton get Best Actor.
Mm-hmm.
Though I don't mind if Eddie Redmayne takes it, if nothing else. The only thing I want to see in the ceremony is I want to see the Everything is Awesome. Like, I want to know what they do with that on stage.
Yeah.
Are they going to have, like, yellow people?
That's so racist.
Oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God.
So it's Tegan and Sarah that does the song?
Yeah.
I think? Yeah.
With The Lonely Island.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is like Sandberg, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Should we agree not to waste any more time? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Bye. Yeah. Laters, baby.
No, I haven't done my plugs.
Oh, fucking fine.
Rate and review us on iTunes, but not this episode. listen to the other shows. They're better. The book was better. Is Goonies this week. And ScarJo Go Go is the other Berlin girl. Not looking forward to that at all. Eric Banner. When were you last excited about a film starring Eric Banner?
Black Hawk Down.
Was it a while ago?
I remember actually buying a copy of Empire magazine because there was a picture of him about 2 inches big because I thought it was quite great that an Australian was in a... Poyter from Full Frontal was in an American movie. Yeah, I thought that was wonderful.
Because Eric Banner was on a comedy show here doing a Bogan character, kind of like Al Wurtho. So, yeah.
Come a long way, baby.
He wasn't like a handsome movie star.
No, I think he's quite handsome.
I did look it up on IMDb today because I was like, what happened to him? It's like he was actually starring in films. And the last sort of big Hollywood-y film he starred in would have been The Time Traveler's Wife in 2009.
Yeah.
Although he is listed for next year as Uther Pendragon in Guy Ritchie's Knights of the Round Table, King Arthur.
Interesting.
Guy Ritchie's King Arthur. And I love him, King fucking Arthur.
I didn't even know that was happening. That's quite exciting.
King Arthur. Go on, you geezers. I'll cut the fucking corners off me table so I can get more of you cunts around it. Come on in, squidge in, lads. Don't be afraid of old Lancelot. He's not gonna poke in the eye or anything, all right? All right, you lads. So go to www.fruitlesspursuits.com where you can find better shows than this one. And you can also tell us how much of your time we wasted and how violated you feel.
Yeah, but don't blame us. You know, it's a slow news week and we saw a shitty movie. What can we do?
Blame the news, yeah.
Blame the news.
What else are we going to talk about? Nothing.
I mean, we could have, like, come up with a list or something, but, like, that.
Like, we've written something down.
Yeah, actually planned the episode at all.
You have to use your hands. It's like a baby's toy. Come on, it's 2015.